the House State Affairs Committee meeting to order. Today is Wednesday, March 13th, 1991. The time is 8:37 in the morning. We have Representatives Cabina, Moyer, Choquette, Bruckman, and Baker here with the House State Affairs. Today we'll be having a joint meeting with the Special Committee on Military and Veterans Affairs, confirmation hearings on Hugh Cox, is that for Adjutant General, Brigadier Generals Dan Dennis and Tom Carroll. All three gentlemen are here with us this morning. At this point, I'd like to turn the meeting over to Chairman Ivan.
Thank you, Chairman Cabina, for the opportunity to conduct this joint confirmation hearing with the facilities and personnel prepared. This morning, from the Military Affairs Committee, we have with us Representative Foster, and I expect Representative Gruenberg, Davidson, Miller to join us later on this morning. We also have with us Representative Baker and Representative Martin with us for the record. With that, we'll be hearing the confirmation hearing on the three gentlemen before us. First up will be Major General Hugh Cox, the Adjutant General appointed by the Governor. And the state constitution requires that the general officers, too, General Dennis and Carroll, to be appointed by the Governor subject to the confirmation by the majority of the legislature. With that, I'll recognize General Cox. Good morning. Welcome to the hearing.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
To start this, I may, I'd like to ask a question of you and basically ask you what your program would be, or how do you visualize the people in rural Alaska, especially the Alaska National Guard. I know we have other members that just like the veterans that we need to address, but for that part of the program, I'd like to ask you what your thoughts are to the Alaska National Guard in the rural areas.
Mr. Chairman, may I request that perhaps first we just hear some general comments from General Cox, and rather than proceed right into Q&A, if that's...
I appreciate it, and I stand corrected. Thank you very much. With that, we'll hear a brief statement from General Cox.
Yes, thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. Well, I'm now in my 31st day in the department, and I must say that a great majority of that time I've either spent going to, from, or in Juneau because of the weather and finance committee hearings and other things. So I've spent about half my time here and half my time in Anchorage. And so far in my initial few days in office, in the position that I'm in, I've been in the midst of learning and assessing where the department is, and with that as a foundation, starting to formulate how I think we ought to proceed in the future. I think I mentioned to your committee, Mr. Ivan, early on, that it, certainly at that point in time, I didn't see any large changes that needed to be made in the focus of the department or the, in my position as Adjutant General and Commander of the Guard. That is still generally true. However, I think that none of us go into new positions not thinking that we can make things better, and I think that I can because by virtue of my experience, and intend to do so. Having said that, I don't intend to make any drastic changes right away, certainly not in the Guard. In the area of the Veterans Affairs, as far as my responsibilities there are concerned, we need to get that program going because it's essentially dormant right now. And in the area of emergency services, I'm in the midst of assessing that as well, and have paid visits to our operation up in the Wasilla area, and am concerned with our preparedness as far as planning to be able to respond to natural as well as technological disasters within the state. My assessment of the department so far is one of solidity, if you will. And I can say that from the view of most of the people in my department are military people, which I relate with very easily, and have no problem assessing where we are and where we're going. I think my predecessor had a very firm foundation established on the military side of the house, and I like what I see. We still have a number of challenges on the military side of the house as far as the Guard is concerned, not the least of which has been the rapid expansion and the numbers of people assigned to both the Army and the Air Guard, and being able to accommodate that in many ways, not the least of which is in the demography. The demographics of some of the areas where we have large units, even though they're the larger metropolitan areas in the state, still pose difficulties in recruiting the qualified people that we need to bring into both the Air and the Army Guard. So I'm pleased with what I see. I see some opportunities to make things better. We're going to do that. And I think, as I say, on the military side of the house, we'll continue to march along in the direction of my predecessor, at least for the short term, emphasizing building the Guard, building it qualitatively while we're building it quantitatively, and making sure that the people in it are trained adequately to do the job that that we have to do for the state as well as on the federal side of the house. For the people who train the federal standards in the Guard. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to proceed as you care.
I was so excited and half cocked earlier. Pardon me for that. I'll proceed with the question that I had earlier. As you, how do you view the Royal Alaska National Guards in rural Alaska, and what's the future for them?
I have spent a little bit of time on the Kuskokwim River in Bethel in the last week or so, and that was my first chance to get out and work with the scouts, which I spent part of an afternoon getting lost on the Kuskokwim, but it was a good experience even though the wind was blowing 40 miles an hour and the snow was horizontal. But I'm pleased to see the leadership that I have met so far, and certainly I haven't met very many of our Guard units in rural Alaska. Lieutenant Colonel Milt Cross is the commander up there, and we went out and presented a couple of medals to a couple of the scout team members. I see the Guard as being, continuing to be, a major influence in rural Alaska. And the Guard has to continue to cultivate our young people that come into the Guard in rural Alaska, to help them develop their skills, not only their military skills, but their leadership skills, which have direct application into the civil sector. I know you all know a lot of names that we could recite that have had permanent, prominent positions within the state, in government as well as in business, who have come from rural Alaska. And many of those, including, I might add, the chairman, came up through the Alaska Guard system. So we regard grassroots Alaska, as, if you will, rural Alaska, as the fertile ground for advancing the leadership of the people in those areas to add to the viability of the Guard throughout Alaska, as well as in the rural areas itself.
The comment, as a follow-up comment to that, I see that the discouragement, and I agree with you, I appreciate the response that you have. I see the Guard system as another step ladder towards human resource development. We don't have very much out there, and most of these young people that get out of the high school, they have high hopes, but fail in some areas when they try to go to further education, and I see the Guard system as an organization that has helped them proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I note from your handout, Clark said you had two stints in Alaska. I just wonder how you could tell me how you made it back to your third stint.
Yes. Well, I was very fortunate, obviously, to have the chance to come back. I won't bore you with the details because, in fact, individually I've spoken with some of you about this, but I came back to Alaska in 76 intending to stay. And through the usual bureaucratic problems, not the least of which was getting promoted to a colonel in the 76, the Air Force would not let me stay. I intend to come back and retire in 77 and stay. Since then, I've been in, as you can see from my biography, gone from pillar to post, moving target, if you will, in different assignments, in different places, and I just retired from active duty last August. I was only in a temporary position in Virginia in a business that I had just started, and I say temporary because the location was temporary, hopefully not the business was. But I did not, at that point in time, know what I was going to do in the long term, only the short term. And I had spoken with some people back 4 years ago, prior to the election in 1986, about the possibility of coming back, and I didn't at that point in time because I was in Germany and had a position with the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And when I had this opportunity to come back, I leapt upon it because it was the satisfaction, if you will, the long-term desire to return to a state that I've grown to like very much.
Thanks.
President Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gerald Cox, this may be an unfair question because I don't know if you've really had time to get into it, but with the, of course, with the military nationwide going to be winding down in the next few years, I think the federal Congress has imbued an expansion of the Guard system throughout the United States. Have you been able to, and I know these are in the preliminary details even at that level, but what expansion do you envision for the Guard system, Army, Air, National Guard, in the state of Alaska because of that?
I just coincidentally had a meeting the day before yesterday with General Tom McNary, the commander of the Alaskan Command. That meeting, by the way, Mr. Chairman, was as a result of the conversations that I had with your committee some weeks ago having to do with a number of items of interest. But one of the focuses of our discussion, was the fact that we, the military in Alaska, both the active and the guard, need to look at what the future is as far as military forces up here toward what should be the proper mix between active duty forces and reserve forces. It's obvious, and I'm sure you allude to the fact that in the post-Desert Storm era, along with the reduction of the federal deficit, the United States military is going to change. I'm not necessarily sure. It will obviously reduce to some extent as far as numbers are concerned, but it's certainly going to change. I think by and large what we'll see is a maintenance of the size of the Guard and Reserve forces. I think what we will obviously see is certainly on the Air Force side, to a certain extent on the Army side, a decrease in the active forces. So what we're going to see as far as the Guard is concerned, in some cases, opportunities to expand, to take up the slack created by the drawdown in the active forces. Guard and reserve forces, by and large, cost about one-fourth of what active duty, a person in the active duty force costs. I say that's by and large, that's not always true, but approximately that's the case. So obviously it's a good investment for the country, and it's a quick payback as far as maintaining military strength, yet doing it at a smaller cost. If you accept the fact that in some cases reserve and guard forces take a little bit longer to get to the war, I think the era that we're coming into of hopefully more peaceful coexistence, some people call it violent peace, but certainly as far as the Soviets are concerned, a more rational time, that our ability to strike quickly, as far as the nuclear forces are still important, but as far as the general purpose forces, we're probably going to fall back from the posture we were in the past, such as people on the inter-German border between East Germany and West Germany poised to attack each other. That means you don't have to have a lot more troops on the line. You probably don't have to have as many. You can have most of them back in the United States, and I think that's what we're going to. As far as Alaska is concerned, the demographics that I alluded to earlier are extremely important, and we have to do that smartly. For instance, in the Fairbanks area right now, we have about 500 people to recruit into the unit up there, and it may be a difficult task to get that many people of traditional guardsmen, as we call the part-time guardsmen, into that organization because of the demographics. So my message and our discussion with General McInerney and I were that we really need to look at what the Guard can do, what it can support, and what it's appropriate to support. And that may call for some changes, probably not in numbers, but perhaps in missions. And he agreed with that. One of the first things that we need to do is to get people that are demographers to come up here and give us some advice and give us some guidelines on what we could expect to do in any area, primarily the metropolitan areas, and see what we can support as far as any plans that could be put forward that would increase the size of the units that exist now, or even perhaps cause the formation of new units.
Representative Choquette.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. General Cox, 5 years ago, you were selected as the first director of operations for a United States Special Operations Command. Could you, not in great detail, but could you tell us what that is? What were your duties?
Well, my duties were that I ran all the operations basically worldwide in that fairly esoteric business as far as the military is concerned, and I think a lot of people don't know about special operations. Special forces, it's not a large mission area. It's not tanks and missiles and those kinds of things. It's basically using surprise, stealth, operating behind the lines, in peacetime operating in potentially hostile territory for the purpose of providing information to commanders in the presence of military operations or anticipating. And the kinds of forces we had assigned were we had Army Special Forces. You remember the Green Berets, I'm sure, of the Vietnam era. They're very much a different force now. Their focus is a bit different. But basically, those teams are language qualified. They're able to go into an area, speak the language of the people that of the area that they're in, and conduct either reconnaissance operations. They can conduct training operations with indigenous forces that are there to mount a larger force, perhaps in an insurrection role against the government in power. Or they can go in and such as in the case of a Desert Storm, talk the language of, say, Kuwaiti resistance fighters and those kinds of people and provide assistance and support to them, technical advisory assistance. And then to support the Army Special Forces, you have the Air Force Special Operations Forces that basically are responsible for getting them in and out of these areas. And they have highly specialized aircraft that enable them to do that. And then on the Navy side, we have what's called sea air land teams. That means that they can swim under the sea, they can jump out of airplanes, and they can go over land. But the maritime forces are aimed at the maritime littoral of whatever area that you're operating in. The initial operations, for instance, in the Panama operation, Just Cause, were all conducted by Special Operations Forces, and the main task was the Special Operations Forces were to get Noriega, which we didn't do a very good job of right away because we didn't know where he was.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's quite a switch coming up here and working in the rural areas.
Any more questions?
General, you're married and have a son. Is your family up here with you? And
my wife is, but my son is, strangely enough, in Air Force pilot training down in the lower 48. He's a second lieutenant and just started pilot training in January with no coercion on the part of his father. My wife is up seeking a job in Anchorage, and we're hopefully building a house very soon.
Well, we should know probably for the record that we do have the Air Force represented well here, and we have the Army represented, and we didn't want to leave anybody out, so our staff is representing the Navy back there.
Representative Bruckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. General Cox, could you expand, please, on your national disaster preparedness thoughts?
Yes, the cornerstone of the ability for my department to support the planning and the preparation of the disasters effort, as well as the orchestration, if you will, after one occurs, is having adequate communications and adequate locations to be able to do that. We don't have that right now, but the check is in the mail, so to speak, in that we are establishing at the New Anchorage Armory, where my offices will be and the emergency operations center will be located, communications capability to be able to orchestrate the federal as well as the local and state response planning as well as responses to technological and natural disasters. Very frankly, what we have right now, which is presently in Wasilla at our armory out there, is entirely inadequate. And where I see us going is, as far as being able to do a better job, is the co-location with my department in Anchorage instead of being in Wasilla, me being in Anchorage, where we have adequate communications and infrastructure to be able to support that effort. A major challenge in the area of disaster preparedness has to be in the area of education, and I've got to tell you that we have not done, the state, nor my department yet, for some reasons, have not done a very good job of education of the population, if you will, as to what to expect, particularly in the area of earthquakes. And we are working full time to start that education program, and we're hiring another person within the next, hopefully within the next month, that's going to be concentrating on putting these modules, these information packages together, and starting to get out and build the program so that we can go around, especially as far as school children are concerned, and talk about things that you need to do when you have things, disasters such as earthquakes. I think by and large, if I were to assess our preparedness in the department as far as the Alaska Division of Emergency Services is concerned, they're in pretty good shape. They've got pretty good plans, but their ability to operate because of its location away from adequate communications and the fact that they don't have a good place to work right now will be improved dramatically when we can all get together in one operation. It's split right now from us. I want to be able to have day-to-day interface with those people instead of them being hostile. And for that reason, we're looking very much forward to being able to consolidate and be a more effective force in the reconstitution civil order and security in the case of the aftermath of an earthquake or any other disaster.
General, is there anything that you'll be asking the legislature to do this year or that you see so far that any changes that need to be made statute-wise or anything that you might be coming to us that you might forewarn us about now?
At this point in time, we do not have any proposed specific pieces of legislation that we would put forward. I think, by and large, we need to proceed in the direction we're going now with what we have to do it. Obviously, the budget is going to have a lot to do with how we're able to proceed. And right now, we don't have any specific pieces of legislation for this session. I do think that we will definitely have some things for the next session because I see some things on the horizon that we need to start pushing. But right now, no, I do not have anything in mind.
Chairman, I'd just also like to say that it appears that the military seems to be in very high standing in our country at this particular point in history, and that we appear to have some very good candidates here to help us in our program here in Alaska with the Guard and whatnot. We're very fortunate to have you, and I just wanted to convey that thank you for coming back, and I look forward to working with you for the next few years.
Representative Baker.
Mr. Chairman, General Cox, as she'll recall, Representative and Ivan and I had the opportunity to attend your change of command at Elmendorf. I know that was the first ever. I hope that change of command continues because that was truly a moving moment. And as perhaps an editorial comment, then I'd like to offer the motion for confirmation.
You know.
Just a moment. after the change of command, Representative Ivan was kind enough to introduce me to several of his constituents troops and under your command here in a few moments, and I'd just like to say that I experienced a real high degree of esprit de corps amongst those troops. There was it'd be a long time since I'd done the military, and there's a change of direction in the military that I was delighted to see, and there are some real fine folks out there, and I was truly moved by some of the Representative Ivan's constituents. And those young men are doing a great service for Alaska, and I'm really proud of it. And I hope that you build on that, because I think that's it's a real tribute to our state. And Mr. Chairman, I'd offer a motion that we confirm General.
Unanimous.
By unanimous confirmation.
You heard the motion. Any objections?
Not an objection, Mr. Chairman. I'm not certain that an emotion is what we have to do. I think it's rather it's the letter signing whether we agree to confirm or no recommendation, the same kind of thing that we normally. But certainly I have no objection to the motion. I'm certainly glad to have
a letter to support confirmation, whatever the proper procedure is.
There will be. There is letters that will be for both committees to sign, and I think the intent of the motion probably is to move the confirmation process forward. There will be a letter to go on, and I think a unanimous consent would be in order on that. The record should show the representative, Davidson, is with us also.
Any objection to the motion? Unanimous? Not so ordered.
Thank you, General.
Thank you. We have a couple more. Up next is General Carroll, Tom Carroll. Of course, with lessons learned from the previous confirmation, we recommend you to make your comments and open up for questions later. Please.
Well, the General said very eloquently many of the things that I could have said, so I'd just like to begin by saying that born and raised in the state of Alaska, 12 years ago I was eligible for the Pioneer's Home. I graduated from East High. I have spent the majority of my adult life since I was 18 in the military or affiliated with it. The last 13 years with the Alaska National Guard, and I have to say that those last 13 years have been extremely satisfying and personally gratifying. I think we have a tremendous program. The Army Guard touches a little over 110 communities in the state of Alaska, and it does many of those things that Representative Ivan alluded to, one of the rungs on the ladder to help our young people achieve some success in life. And of course, one of my goals is to support General Cox and his efforts to make those things happen. And with that, I would like to pass it back to you,
Representative Kochek.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of this committee know General Carroll for a long time. He's a local boy. And basically, I would highly recommend him for any position he chose to desire to work at. Some comments, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Any more questions, comments? Representative Cabina.
Mr. Chairman. Colonel, I don't know whether to call you Colonel or General. What do we call you?
Tom.
I'm going to promote him, make it good.
Which one?
Tom.
Tom.
That'd be fun.
Well, would you explain to me maybe what your function will be now in this position? Obviously, the general is the number one on the stick. Maybe you might let us know where you fit in.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Probably in simple explanation is that General Cox commands the Alaska National Guard, and I will command the Army Guard and be responsible as the commander for everything it does or fails to do. General Cox. And I'll have the day-to-day responsibility for ensuring and developing policy, making sure that follow-through takes place and that our programs are implemented and executed where they take place on the ground in the communities throughout Alaska.
Question? Comment?
There's no further comments, Mr. Chairman.
Make it easy on him.
If there's no further comments, I would make a motion to do what Representative Davis so eloquently showed us we had to do, and asking for unanimous confirmation. For a letter of confirmation for Tom's position.
Unanimous consent has been requested for confirmation. Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Thank you.
Thank you, thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
No, here's the hard one coming up.
Yeah.
Boy, I know the list of questions.
Where's my notes on this guy? Who took my notes?
Welcome, Colonel Dennis. Proceed with your comments.
Thank you. I, after the General and Tom have gone through this, I just want to comment how pleased I am to be here, pleased I am to be the appointed Assistant Adjutant General for Air Alaska. I was, unfortunately, not like Tom. I was born in Idaho, but I had a choice, and I came up here 13 years ago as a federal prosecutor on a two-year tour. And I realized when I first came through Ketchikan on the ferry that I didn't plan on leaving. And I haven't. I spent 4 years in the U.S. Attorney's Office, and since 1981, I've had my own private practice in law. I've been a member of the Air Guard since 1978 as the headquarters lawyer. Prior to that time, my military experience somewhat varied. I served 3 years in the Idaho Army National Guard, and prior to that, 4 years on active duty as a naval officer. So I have a whole closet full of uniforms in case anybody needs any. Most of my military experience has been as a staff officer, and my position now is basically as a staff officer. Colonel Taylor, Ken Taylor, is the commander of the Air Guard, directly under General Cox. And my function will be to assist General Cox and to assist Colonel Taylor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is not just an issue, but a question that arose that I'd like to ask all three gentlemen to look into. Over the last 3 days, I've been working with the Department of Benefits, and because of the crisis, a number of our men and women have been called to do their reserves or as National Guard, and it looks like we may have a problem that because we're serving their country, they're also deprived of their health and benefits for the wives and children. So if you all would look into those and see if you found any hardship cases where someone, because of the crisis, if they're going into reserve training, they're covered if they're state and city and teachers and so on. But if they're called because of war, then they're not covered. And so we need to look at this, not that two cases now that the department temporarily is going to allow coverage for the wife and children by regulations. But if y'all would look into that, we want to make sure there's permanent coverage. Thank you.
Is your point well taken and will be addressed certainly?
Just a matter of interest. There should be, if they're activated, they're covered, of course, under the active duty military hospitalization.
Yes.
And medical coverage.
Yes, sir. I'm glad you brought that. We realize that, but you know, for a person that may be in Bedville, a person that may be, God knows where in this state, having military coverage for military benefits doesn't help them much when they have to go to Anchorage to get it. If we can continue their coverage as a state employee or a teacher or whatever, that would be much more beneficial to that family until he or she returns to their civilian life.
Representative Foster.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move at this time that we unanimously agree to a letter of confirmation for the Colonel, General Dennis, without objection.
With no objections, so ordered.
House State Affairs Committee meeting will take about a 5-minute break, and then we will reconvene. House Military and Veterans Affairs meeting is over.
Thanks, David.
No, the House State Affairs Committee meeting. And the other thing that I wanted to ask about is anybody here? I plan on having some hearings in Anchorage during Easter break. We've reserved the LIO in Anchorage for 1 o'clock on Monday afternoon for senior citizens' issues, mainly some bills we have on longevity bonus. Robin Taylor has one. There's the nursing home thing, and I would like to also talk about, but we don't have the bill, so I'm not sure the procedure here, whether I can even do it, but I think at least conceptually talk about the governor's proposal to, you know, chop 5% off the permanent fund dividend programs and change the age to 65 to 70. So while we don't have that bill, I think it'd be appropriate to at least discuss that issue. I'm going to have some hearing in Valdez on probably on Saturday, and if any, not Anchorage, but if one of you two who are out of Anchorage wanted to do anything at that time, we could teleconference your area at the same time, and sort of you could run one up there. Do you have, Tom probably isn't going to be there. Do you have any desire to do that,
Mike? I don't have any idea if I'm even going to be there.
Okay. So if you do want to, that option's open for you. And how many of you could be in Anchorage on Monday afternoon? Okay, so you think that's a good idea? I think it's a good issue for all of us. Mm-hmm. And then what I'll do is request from the Speaker's office travel for the committee for that weekend. Representative Choquette?
Mr. Chairman, are we talking about the longevity bill? Which bill are we referring to for Monday in Anchorage?
Probably all the senior citizens issues that we have on board.
I've been getting a lot of POMs concerning these issues. I'm wondering if we can go ahead and write some letters and this will be a firm date.
Yeah, we'll get it firmed up soon. I'll have to get absolute confirmation from the Speaker that we can do it. And so we advertise it well in advance. Okay, does that suit everybody's,
yep,
feel good with everybody?
So in other words, you can say other bills because we don't know what are bills to be introduced.
We'll have to word it some way on just on the governor's proposal.
Yeah, I think you can, Mr. Chairman, I think you can word it just talking about longevity bonus in general, yeah, and that covers the whole spectrum of things. I mean, that could cover the annuity program, because at some point there's going to have to be discussions, I think, upon those types of programs.
Okay.
Because I mean, at some time we're going to have to look at the cost.
Yeah. Yep. Where's your line?
Oh, baby. Another way you didn't like my saying in this place.
No, half the Veterans Affairs Committee signed ours.
Oh, I didn't know it was just ours.
Well, and Terry signed it too. He shouldn't have signed any of them.
Mr. Chairman,
you can get away with
Representative Choquette.
I wonder if we might take up a very brief discussion on another on a resolution that's been referred to this committee.
It's not before, so we can't discuss the merits, but we can discuss strategy or scheduling. Or
I wanted you to maybe appoint a subcommittee so that we can. Is that the way we do it?
I'm not sure I can do that. Here's my plans. We schedule today. Then I'm going to schedule it for Monday.
And we can't have any Monday.
No, this coming Monday. Next Monday.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we've been told by the Speaker not to have any committee meetings for that week.
No. Friday we're not having a committee meeting. We're meeting Monday, Wednesday.
The clarification was if it didn't interfere with any one member who had to be at a budget subcommittee, I asked too.
No, we're only not meeting Friday.
So we're not meeting next Friday?
Next Friday we'll not have a meeting. I'm going to schedule that bill on Monday, and at that time, you got to get notice before we do anything on it. At that time, I'll appoint a subcommittee on that bill.
Okay. As far as you're concerned, that's going to happen. I mean,
yeah,
we can go ahead and make a
decision. We can start planning on that.
Why didn't I just sign three when I signed one before? Are we doing it all?
that one away.
And extraneous signatories.
Okay. Anybody have anything else?
Yeah.
I know I've talked to some of you about introducing this resolution this morning, if you want to, you know, co-sponsor, pass it around.
Did you put me on it?
Yeah, I saw you yesterday. Yeah, you too.
Anything else for the committee? If not, the next meeting for the House State Affairs will be Friday, March 15th, 1991. At that time, we will be hearing Senate Bill 18 relating to investment of pension funds. Will we have?
Yes.
We will have House Bill 40.
Finally, yeah.
And other bills previously heard.
Even if you hear otherwise, we will have it.
She already signed it.
Already signed it. Are you going to
listen? I saw her yesterday.
Anything else for the committee? Not, we're adjourned at 9:30, 9:26.
Mr. Chairman?